absolutely nothing, and no one is going to stop us.
What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
Mark Latham.
Mark Latham, the leader of One Nation in New South Wales, joins me each and every Thursday afternoon. Hello, Mark. How are you this week?
Really good, thanks, Brent. Thanks for having me on the show here in New South Wales Budget Week.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. You made the comment about New South Wales Budget Week. The story about John Barilaro, that seems to have overtaken any real publicity that the New South Wales government was going to receive about their budget. Although, maybe, just maybe, they thought the other way around. They thought they'd release the story about Barilaro a similar time to when the budget was being released, and that it would bury that story because the highlight would be on the budget. Well, if that was the approach, it backfired, didn't it?
Well, it did. Stuart Ayres, the Trade Minister, announced the Barilaro appointment on Friday, and the opposition certainly had the egg beater out on it to whip it up and make it a high-profile issue. So, yeah, it's been a contest between the Barilaro story and the state budget to see which one takes the headlines. But I've got to say on the Barilaro matter, my understanding is that he applied and went through the normal public service process. It didn't have to go to Cabinet. And looking at the other applicants, one of them was the former Liberal MP, Peter Hendy, who I don't think was up to the job. But Barilaro, as industry minister in New South Wales, would know every significant business leader, a big part of the mining sector. And when he was a business person himself, Barilaro, before he got into Parliament, he was an exporter. So I'm not too sure, just because someone has previously been in the Parliament, that they're ruled out as a qualified person to do the job. So I don't see as big a problem. And there's some other appointments that are made around the place that caused me more concern than the John Barilaro.
I suppose the story that has come to light since this announcement, though, was the fact that last year Gladys Berejiklian told Jenny, a lady called Jenny West, that she already had the job. She applied for the job when it was first advertised, her and many other people, and Gladys Berejiklian told Jenny West she had the job in August, but then that offer was later rescinded and the role was re-advertised. And of course, there's talk about Jenny West being given financial compensation, and the reason for that is because when she was told by Gladys Berejiklian that she had the job, she resigned from her job thinking she had this job, and then all of a sudden she was told that she didn't have the job. I imagine that's why there was financial compensation paid to her.
Well, the government's saying that Jenny West wasn't offered the job, and there's no letter or correspondence to say that. Whether she was a friend of Gladys Berejiklian, I don't know, but who's Jenny West?
I go
to budget estimates with the Treasury officials, and she was part of that department, and she wasn't senior enough to be in the top rank of 15 Treasury officials sitting there at the budget estimate. So Jenny West is relatively young. She hasn't got anywhere near the depth of CV or experience as John Barilaro. And if Gladys Berejiklian gave her a wink and a nod, that's one thing, but Gladys left and was no longer the Premier. So if Jenny West had a letter saying you've been appointed and was then revoked, well, she'd seek compensation, and that hasn't happened. So people are banging on about Jenny West, but who is she? She's not very senior in the system and relatively young. I don't see how anyone could possibly argue she'd be a better trade commissioner for the Americas than Barilaro.
So tell me what's going on now with certain members of the Liberal Party that aren't happy about the appointment and people in the upper house that aren't happy about the appointment. What's exactly the process that's taking place now?
Well, the government says, and I think this is correct, that it was never a cabinet appointment. It was never on the cabinet agenda. It was a public service appointment that was made after a recruitment process, interviews, and a selection was made for Barilaro. But the thing you've got to understand about Barilaro, I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but he was a doer here. And what really has caused the angst here inside the Liberal Party and obviously the Labor Party and the Greens was his role in killing off the koala SEP. Remember when Rob Stokes, in a moment of insanity, declared half of New South Wales to be koala habitat? Roundabouts were supposed to have koalas, football stadiums, whole suburbs where you hadn't seen a koala for 50 years. were declared koala habitat. And if you tried to do a reno on your house or a granny flat out the back, they would have said no because it'll damage the koala. So Barilaro blew up about that. This planning instrument for koala protection was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in town planning, by far. And Barilaro had every right to blow up about it, and they labelled him a koala killer, and that's where the antagonism to him from the left-wing media and the left-wing Liberal Party has come from.
Right. What do you think will be the outcome of this, they call it the urgent upper house inquiry to examine the process behind the decision?
Well, they'll call some witnesses and ask some questions, but I'd be surprised if they elicit any more information than what I've given you
this
today.
Right.
You know, let's understand here, we're not sort of talking about fair play rules. The Labor Party in New South Wales has just watched Albanese win in Canberra, in part by getting all the sexy stuff, the scandal up against Scott Morrison in the Federal Parliament House, Brittany Higgins, and on it goes. And they've worked out here in Macquarie Street that an undercurrent of scandal about the Perrottet government is to the political advantage of the Labor Party. Now, that's not unusual, but I think it's in that context that the upper house inquiry and also the antagonism about koalas, it's in that context that you need to position the whole Barilaro affair. I'm independent. I'm a hard but fair marker on these things, and I haven't seen an impropriety yet in this. But maybe one will come out of the inquiry. We'll have to wait and see. But Brent, I think the inquiry is a lot more politics than it is substance.
Okay, let's talk about the budget. Perrottet has handed down its the first budget. He and Matt Keane have looked to make their mark on both the economy and voters, of course, as we have another election, a state election in March 25 of next year. The deficit, it's blown out to $11.3 billion, far exceeding the $3.6 billion deficit forecast for the 2021 half-yearly review. I mean, boy, what a deficit.
Yeah, and the debt has gone to $115 billion net debt and $182 billion gross debt. I think they're repeating the mistakes of Morrison and Frydenberg, who went on a spending spree. Now, because you spend money on COVID or floods or bushfire, it doesn't mean you can't go and make savings elsewhere in the other 95% of the budget. But there's no savings. I just told the upper house that over the last two budgets, the Perrottet government has made 362 policy changes. That's a lot, 362. How many are actual cost savings to say, here's something we don't need to do or we can do it more efficiently? Just three. Gosh. So out of 120 policy changes where they decide to change state government policy, only one of them is a cost saving. The other 119, it's mostly just a spending spree. So I think this is, and it's very easy, Brent, probably the easiest thing in politics is to spend other people's money and not care. And Perrottet and Keane laughing about the $25 million flagpole, of course, was a sign of that. If you don't care about other people's money, you will spend it without providing value for money and cost saving. So this government has forgotten how to provide cost efficiency. Morrison and Frydenberg blew the debt out to a trillion. Our great-great-grandkids will be paying it off. And I think the government here is just as bad. And a lot of traditional conservative voters who like fiscal prudence say this really can't be the party of John Howard and Peter Costello anymore, where they paid down debt. They're accumulating debt like drunken sailors.
What's your thoughts about the stamp duty policy?
Well, I wish they'd gone the full Monty. Sure, first home buyers need relief, but the truth is 25% of homeowners in New South Wales say, I'd like to live closer to where I work or closer to where my children go to school, but the huge upfront stamp duty impost stops me from moving. And that impost in Sydney now is over $50,000 upfront on average. So if you're stopping people from getting closer to where they work or where their family has interests, that's more congestion, more inefficiency, less productivity, and more dysfunctional urban areas. So I wish they'd gone the full Monty. And in a budget where they just spent on everything, why couldn't they spend the extra $2 billion needed to do the full stamp duty reform, where home buyers later in the year, of any description, whether you've owned a home previously or not, could make the choice, and it's your own choice. Do you pay the stamp duty up front, or do you have the lower amount of land tax over a longer period of time? And generally, we're sort of thinking after 20 years, you'd catch up to what the upfront stamp duty would have been. So that's a choice. I like choice in economic policy, and if it added efficiency to our cities and economic growth and productivity, which it would have, I think that would have been the top priority if I was framing the budget.
Good points that you liked in the budget as opposed to bad points. And give me some good and give me some bad.
Give you some good. Well, the beginning of stamp duty reform, first home buyers, and the shared equity scheme that they've got, there is a bit of help there for first home buyers because that's a critical issue. I think the canning of the Northern Beaches Road Link, which was never a financially sound project, that's one good thing. But there's not a lot else in a spending spree where I think a lot of the money will be wasted. They say cost of living relief for people, but realistically, if you stimulate the economy with $11 billion of debt and $11 billion of deficit and $182 billion of debt, stimulating the economy actually adds to the number one problem we've got at the moment, that's rising inflation and rising interest rates. So people might get some money in the pocket later this year in these vouchers and subsidy schemes for households, but you'll probably give a lot of it back with the extra pressure on inflation as prices go up at the supermarket and elsewhere. So I don't think it's a budget of good economics. I don't think it's a budget of good financial management. And it's very much a pre-election spending spree.
Just like the Libs did, federally.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. How did that end? Not well. You know, I think the Liberals lose a lot of legitimacy and credibility with their own voter base when they spend more than Labor and the Greens could ever dream of.
Yes, we've obviously taken callers this week that have had an opinion and wanted to say something about their budget. And I would suggest most feel that come March next year, New South Wales will be looking at a brand new premier, and it won't be Dominic Perrottet, and it'll be from Labor side. Chris Minns.
Yeah, I think the government's got a lot of work to do to say to the public, here are the reasons why you'd give us an extra term, mm-hmm. 16 years of government in total. There's obviously a mood for change. We saw that in Canberra. And unless you give the voters sound reason for another term in office, they'll look elsewhere. And it's got to be said, Chris Minns looks like a reasonably solid, common-sense alternative. He's certainly not frightening the horses. So, I think the Liberal Party here has got a lot of work to do.
Mark, the public sector workers are going to lose thousands of dollars a year due to rising costs of living pressures because the Labor has voted to keep that public sector wage gap.
Yeah, very strange decision by the Labor Party. They've complained for 11 years about the wage cap restriction, and then they voted for it. So I don't know what policy they're going to develop. I think the best policy is to get rid of the cap and go back to productivity-based enterprise bargaining. I mean, the government is the employer, the biggest employer in New South Wales, of all these public sector workers. Well, negotiate with them sector by sector, workplace by workplace, say, can we make savings? Can we have efficiency? Can we have productivity? And on that basis, you can get a decent pay rise. And productivity-based pay rises don't add to inflation because it doesn't hurt the employer's budget. So, and they don't have to pass the prices on. So that's the alternative. That's really where the Keating and Howard government's got to with the wages sector. I suppose work choices in 2007 poisoned the well. But it's a very crude policy just to have a cap and not argue for any productivity. And I can tell you that right across the public sector, productivity's just disappeared. It's forgotten, even as a concept. And a lot of the woke rubbish programs and distractions they do, you could easily get good productivity improvements in the public sector, pay people a decent wage increase, and get on with better policy that way.
Matt Keane, my goodness, what can you say about Matt Keane? The upper house has censured Matt Keane over lying about Erin Power Station.
Yeah, he told us at the budget estimates in November, where he's obliged to tell the truth, as a parliamentarian, that he didn't have prior notice or prior knowledge of the closure of Eraring Power Station by Origin Energy. And then we got some documents under our FOI powers in the upper house, and they showed the government had been in 7 months of negotiation with Origin Energy, and Origin Energy was saying consistently, this power station is closing. And we're telling the government now, you might want to buy us out, you might want to give us some money to operate it for a year or two longer, but it will close, and we will make that announcement at the very latest that our half-yearly results in February of 2022. So Keane knew. Unfortunately, Matt Keane takes the position he'll say and do anything to get out of a bind in the moment, and he misled the Parliament. And under the old system, unfortunately, a fading tradition, under the old system, a minister who misleads the Parliament should resign. So if we still had that system now, he wouldn't have given the budget on Tuesday. He would have been sitting on the backbench.
When did that change?
Well, I mean, it's changed in that governments don't enforce it. You go back to the Whitlam government in Canberra. Whitlam, you know, it was a chaotic government. But part of it was that if a minister misled the Parliament, Whitlam sacked them straight away, and he sacked about four or five along those lines. It started to fade under the Fraser government. Howard really excused ministers who misled the Parliament, and the system has deteriorated ever since, which I think is a dreadful shame for the quality of our democracy and part of the public's mistrust of the system. Because if ministers aren't telling the Parliament the truth, they're certainly not telling the people the truth. And the whole system just becomes a whole series of spin and lies and deceptions, and it melts down from there. And Matt Keane, you know, even his own people here, Brent, say this guy just lies through his teeth a lot of the time. And it's an unacceptable debasing of the standards.
Let's talk about the flagpole. I mean, gosh, we've talked and talked and talked about the flagpole. $25 million, it's come to light that, you know, you can get flagpoles on the top of the Sydney Harbour Bridge for a lot less than $25 million. But what it did show was that if it hadn't been talked about, if the media hadn't started to pick it up and talk about it, and that means the callers on Talkback Radio talking about it, it just looks as though it would have been signed through and someone would have got themselves $25 million and no one would have known any the better. Whereas it seems like about a $650 to $1 million job to do the whole three of them.
Yeah, it's the most inflated price anyone's ever seen. I was out for a lunchtime walk yesterday down near the Opera House and obviously had a look over to see what all the fuss was about. On a windless day with the glare, you can't see those flags.
Right.
The flags hang right next to the flagpole. And if you said to someone from out of town, what are those flags up there? They say, well, I can't tell. I can't tell what they are. I assume yesterday and today they're the Australian flag and the New South Wales flag. But I don't think many people can see these flags. You'd have to live right on the harbour there to get a good view of them on a windy day when they fly out perpendicular. I think the whole thing is a waste of money under any conditions. And 4 years ago, Dominic Perrottet said this is ridiculous virtue signalling waste of money. And given the way it's all exploded in his face, I'm sure he's wishing he'd listened to his same self from 4 years ago and not done anything about it. Because, you know, I don't mind when the woke rubbish explodes in their face. So that's what's happened. And Perrottet, I think, has made a huge mistake on several fronts.
As many have said this week, it obviously didn't pass the pub test at all. And, you know, they're going to pay the price for it.
Yeah, well, if you've got any money to spend in Indigenous affairs, get out to Walgett High School, which is so violent and dysfunctional. Whole families are leaving Walgett, and other families, including Indigenous, are busing their kids to Lightning Ridge an hour away to get to a better school where it's reasonably safe for the students. So if you've got a spare $25 million lying around, use it, in part, to hire the best teachers in New South Wales to make sure Walgett High School is actually a functioning high school. It's Indigenous run at the moment. It's a complete sad, chaotic debacle. And if you really want to spend money in Indigenous affairs, at least give it a practical outcome instead of a flag on a bridge that 99% of people in New South Wales will never see.
I've only got a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to get your comments on the Lisa Wilkinson saga. I see there's a headline today that says Ten and Wilkinson have hired top barrister Matthew Collins after he slammed her Logie speech in this television interview. He was on Sunrise the other morning, and he was having a crack at Ten and her, and it appears as though now they may have hired him to represent them if something goes wrong here.
Well, it's I think the work of people with a big ego, and certainly some people in the media think that, you know, they're point of view is more important than the criminal justice system and the presumption of innocence and the principles of a fair trial. And Lisa Wilkinson, with her arrogance, I think, has gone down that path. But it's counterproductive, isn't it? Because she says she wants justice. She thinks this guy is guilty. We've got to presume his innocence. She thinks he's guilty, and now the trial is delayed and might be aborted, and she might be in contempt of court. I mean, it's a de facto attack on the justice system that she should be ashamed of.
It'll be interesting to see if anything does.
Probably not. I don't think.
Yeah, I was just going as court. I was saying
they
that.
They sent
I thought,
a rocket at her.
They
sent a rocket to say, "Don't do it again." But yeah. Geez, people with a big ego, they're a bit dangerous, aren't they?
Silly thing is, she was told already before she got up on stage on the weekend that she was to say nothing, and she ignored it. Anyway,
she'd be a hanging judge for him anyway. She thinks she knows everything.
She does, doesn't she? What did someone say in an email this afternoon? Her and the husband are a perfect match.
That's right. I'll tell you what, you wouldn't get a word in, would you, in that house? They're both know-alls, experts on the world.
It's always good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for your time. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. That's Mark Latham, leader of One Nation in New South Wales.